We are going to tell a story. And I've told this story before, but not as completely as it will be told here in this segment, because this week is the 20th anniversary of the ill-fated Guy's Flight Out, when we took a plane of P-1s to see a Cowboys-Colts game. In 1999, this station had a promo, and it was called a promotion called Guy's Flight Out. Like, we have Guy's Night Out tonight. We had Guy's Flight Out, where P-1s would win spots on a small plane, and we would go to a Cowboys road trip.
Great.
And all of the hosts rotated going on these 8 Cowboy road trips. So my game that year was the last week of October, the Cowboys at the Indianapolis Colts. And so I was able to take a guest on the 6-seat flight. There were 4 P1s who won the contest, the drawing for that week and each week. And then the host would be able to take a guest. So I took my longtime friend from high school, Rhonda. And so Rhonda and I were on the plane, the 6-seater, with our backs to the cockpit, our backs to the pilots.
That's kind of weird.
And there were 4 P1s. Yeah, it's weird to fly backwards.
Yeah.
And there were 4 P1s on the flight with us. And 3 of them join us here in this segment. And so we say good morning to Andrew, and this was your idea to do this roundtable. He alerted me about a month ago, hey, we're coming up on the 20th anniversary. Can you believe it? And so, great idea, Andrew. Thanks for coming out here and joining us.
Sure.
I kind of told him to come up with his ideas.
No, so did you? Really
kind of
had nothing to do with it.
Anyway, go ahead.
Also with us here, Victor. Good to see you again, Victor.
Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Rance cannot be with us, but the fourth member of the P1s who won. No, Rance is still with us.
Okay.
He's just
all
not
right
with us here this morning. The fourth member of the Guy's Flight Out crew, or passengers that day, is also a longtime P1 who wrote the theme song for this show, and he joins us via the phone now. He lives in
Huntsville.
In Huntsville, Texas, where he's awaiting on death row.
Awaiting the chair.
It's Paul Lord Byron who joins us on the ticket.
Hey, Lord Byron.
Good morning.
You're in Indiana
survivors
these days, or in Illinois these days, correct?
Good old Champaign, yeah. Yep.
Champaign, uh-huh. Illinois. Mm. How are you?
Oh, alive and kicking.
Yeah, sounds like it.
There's a slight delay. Just give him a second.
All right, calm down.
Don't yell at Lord Byron.
We think of you every day when we spin this famous theme song.
Played so many times on this station. There it is.
That's a genius work of music right there.
Thank you.
It did have verse and chorus, didn't it?
That has verses.
Yes.
Yeah. Has lyrics and everything.
Hit switch on the radio. Above the ding ding, and I'm ready to go.
Stuff. Do you guys remember the name of the song?
Tiger Rising, the competition.
Yes.
That's what we've been doing around here.
All right. So it's great to have you guys with us to relive this, because this is one of the most scarring incidents of my life, and I'm sure probably your lives as well. So I'm going to kind of fast forward to the moment. So we take off that morning, and it's a 6-seater, so you have the 2 pilots, and then you have the 6 passengers. And I posted a picture of this on my Twitter page, and the picture shows how we were all sitting. And the picture is of the oxygen mask being deployed and all of this. It's about, I'd say, about a 2-hour flight, 2.5-hour flight, mm-hmm, something like that.
Were you all freaked out that it was Halloween? Did you even think about that?
We didn't think about that. Yeah, it was actually on Halloween Day. It was on a Sunday, of course, for a Cowboys game. But we didn't think about that. The weather was fine.
Yeah.
And the first 2 hours of the flight were uneventful, as I recall.
Beautiful. The weather was great.
Mm-hmm. Smooth flight.
We had a good time. We were laughing it up. We were talking about the Cowboys, and we were excited about a big game.
Now, mind you, this was Halloween didn't really bother us, but this was like 6 days after the Payne Stewart incident. So that was kind of weighing on our minds.
Right.
Slightly.
Yep.
Yes.
Similar plane.
So, and the Payne Stewart incident was when the SEAL busted on the jet that he was riding in. Everyone died, but the plane kept flying for a few hours, I believe, right?
Yeah,
before it
correct
finally crashed?
Yeah, so they were at 36,000 feet, I believe, the Payne Stewart incident. And so when the SEAL busted and they lost cabin pressure, they were all knocked out immediately.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right, so we're about 2 hours into the flight. Everything's going fine. And then we hear a loud pop.
Almost like a seal busting.
Almost like a seal busting. And we kind of looked around and we thought, man, that was really weird. And then I turned around to the two pilots, the pilot and the co-pilot, and I said, is everything okay? And the one guy, the co-pilot, because I could see him from my angle, he says, yeah, everything's fine. Well, then the plane starts to kind of descend, and you guys jump in at any moment when I'm getting this wrong. The plane starts to kind of descend, and we hear some noise, and I turn around, and I remember seeing a red light flashing on the control panel, and I said, are you sure everything's all right? And he said, yeah. Turn back around, and that's when the oxygen masks come down from above.
Oh, man.
And then I turned back around the third time, and I said, are you sure? And before I could get my question out, he goes, put on your masks. Put on your masks.
Do it now, damn it. Do it now.
And the plane is suddenly going into this very steep nosedive. Does all of that ring a bell?
Yes, we could see cornfields through the front of the plane as it was going down. But there was this loud buzzing going on, which must have been the vibration of the door seal that was,
yeah, it was like
vibrating with the air
whistle coming
in or going out, whatever the case may be.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, my only thought was to pull my camera out, which I'm glad I did because we have those pictures.
Yes. You remained calm.
I did. There was a sense of peace that came over me at that time. And I was thinking about the implications that the investigation that would have to happen. I wanted to make sure we had some evidence.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
you were leaving documents.
That's right.
Was Junior screaming?
Right there.
He was not screaming.
Yeah, he said he had the same feeling, right?
Yeah.
That you just thought, okay, something's weird, but we're okay.
The only moment of panic I had was when I couldn't get my oxygen mask pulled down all the way.
Oh.
So Rhonda was a flight attendant, so she stands up like I'm a little 8-year-old, and she pulls the mask down for me and puts it on.
I had the same issue. I couldn't get my oxygen mask. It seemed like it was hung up in the ceiling, so I yanked it down. I thought I pulled it completely out of the ceiling.
Yeah.
You guys all had your masks on, and I'm waiting for the flight attendant from the rear, responsible for the rear of the plane, to come assist me. It never happened.
Yeah.
So did you never get your oxygen mask on?
No, I eventually did, okay. So I didn't pass out, fortunately.
How often do they test those things? Because if the plane's operating correctly, they never go off.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they've got to test them once a year or something. Paul, do you remember having a sense of calm, or were you panicked?
Oh, no. I was definitely towards panic. I was wanting you guys to pass me that bottle of Kettle One up front from up front, and I think that I got it. And I think I just nursed that baby all the way into Indy.
Yeah, so the actual nosedive, so you have to picture this. We are in a nosedive, and like you said, Andrew, we're seeing cornfields, and to me it felt like the nosedive as we're wearing our oxygen masks and not knowing what's happening, and we've just heard a loud pop. To me, the nosedive felt like it lasted about 10 minutes. Probably wasn't that long, but do you guys remember about how long it was?
I would guess it was 1 minute.
One or two,
we had to get down from, I think we were 40,000 feet-ish, and we had to get down to 12, I believe, is what they told us afterwards.
That's a long time to be in a nosedive.
12 feet? That seems dangerous to be that low.
Yeah, so I thought we had already kind of started our descent, and we had come down to about 30. Does that ring a bell at all, or do you think we were still at cruising altitude?
I think we were still at cruising.
Okay.
That's what I remember.
No, I could see the altimeter, and we were down close to 30,000 feet, and I am positive that's what saved our butts, because if we had been up around 40, we had been up to 41 at one time. I had a unique vantage point, because I could see the cockpit, but the way the curtains were drawn, I'm not sure anybody else could see some of the controls that I saw.
Were they going crazy, like in a
spinning
big circle?
Like Bugs Bunny?
There was definitely that flashing light that Junior was talking about, no question about it. It was a little concerning from where I was, for sure.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, I do think we had started our descent, because that's what the NTSB... Is that
investigator,
right? The investigator.
National
the FAA.
Tire and Battery.
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't National Tire and Battery. Oh. It was the FAA. They came and investigate or interviewed me like a week later, and they.
John
and
McKay.
I'll tell that story here in a second. But yeah, so the nosedive goes for about a minute or two. And yes, the only thought I had was, wow, I can't believe this. After all the years watching these airplane movies and seeing all these stories on the news about plane crashes, I can't believe I'm going to die in a plane crash, because it felt like we were out of control, headed straight to the ground, and I was okay with it.
Isn't that weird?
Wow.
It's really
why
weird.
The calm overtakes you?
It's like you're just resigned to the fact that you can't do anything about it and you're going to die.
And you just eased your pants down?
And I eased my pants down. Hey, I want to apologize to you guys for that, by the way.
Trying to get in one last one.
Whoa. Yeah. just leave it at pants down.
Okay.
So then we do, after about a minute or two of a nosedive, we do then level out at 10,000 feet. And then we all kind of were like, oh, we're not going to die. Do you remember a sense of being, like, surprised that we leveled out, or did you guys think that's what we were going to do all along?
I actually was a little wet. I was basically sitting in a puddle of urine for the last 15 minutes of the flight.
When y'all leveled out, did one of you regret crunching the cyanide capsule just about 2 seconds before?
I do remember Lord Byron asking for the Kettle One at that point.
Yeah.
He pounded a good bit of that, for sure.
Yeah, so even after you level out, you're probably expecting something else to go wrong. Like, are we out of it yet?
Right. But we leveled out, and we continued then a controlled descent. And I do remember when we came into the airport in Indianapolis, the runway was lined with ambulances and fire trucks and all the red lights on, like they had all been ordered out to our landing.
How far did you say it was from when this happened to when you landed?
I want to say like 15 or 20 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Because it was a wet ride for that last 15. Yeah.
So it was, you guys were in your approach. That's what saved you, right? Because you were descending already to land.
Yeah.
So if this had happened just a few minutes before, y'all would have been pain-stewarded.
So we land.
You got it.
We land, and then we get off the plane, and now we got to go have a fun lunch and watch a Cowboys game, and we're all shaken.
Best friends.
And they tell us that they're going to fly the plane to Chicago, I think it was, to repair it.
Cleveland, I believe.
Ohio. Was it Cleveland?
Yeah, it was Ohio.
Okay, Cleveland. To repair it while we're at the game, and they said, the plane will be fine when you come back, and you'll take that plane home. So my thought was, well, the plane will be safer than it's ever been because it will have just been repaired.
Uh-huh.
But, Paul, you didn't feel the same way, did you?
Oh, no. I wanted a big, fat commercial plane with more Kettle One on it.
And so you booked a flight back.
You bet I did.
I think I'm with Paul. I would have had a hard time getting back on that plane after that.
I'm
impressed you guys got back on it.
My theory was, if the pilot and co-pilot are willing to get in the cockpit and fly it, I'm good.
I know. It all sounds reasonable, but at the same time, after going through that and just stepping on that plane again, that setting again, I think it would be tough.
I also rationalized it that the FAA has just crawled all over this plane, right? So it's going to be the safest flight we ever take.
That's what I thought.
And it was.
Maybe. You just never know when somebody has a death wish. So I said, forget it.
That's right.
But the good people at the ticket, they actually reimbursed me for the plane fare, so it was okay.
Wow, we don't get reimbursed.
Because think about it. Your logic falls apart if you think of, what if this was a suicidal pilot who had punctured the seal for this thing to happen, and then he's the same pilot that gets back on it. There's no guarantee he's not going to sabotage it again.
Yeah.
Or say, yeah, we fixed it.
Right there.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and
see the way I think?
I remember when Paul told me, and you told me very early, it was either at lunch or at the game, hey, I'm taking a commercial flight back, there's no way. And I think I promised you the ticket would pay for your flight back, and we made good on that promise. That's what the ticket
yes,
does.
Yes, you did. Yeah, Thank you very much for that.
Speaking of the pilots, this is a funny footnote. So many, many years ago, before this even happened, we had a company that advertised with us called Sim Fighters, and it was a flight simulation business where you could go and pay to fly in a flight simulator.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
And we always joked because we did remotes from there and we did live spots for them, and they went out of business like a year later. We always joked that the ticket put them out of business. Well, the co-pilot that day was the guy who owned Sim Fighters.
Yeah. And so he had a revenge motive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So we always thought that this was his way of getting back at the ticket, putting him out of business. He wasted all of his money with this pick.
And then you had to see the crash and burn of the Cowboy offense that day against
Norm,
the Colts.
Thank you for the sports tie-in.
A Chan Gailey afternoon.
Uh-huh. The Cowboys lost that game 34-24. Then all of us except Paul get back on the plane, and we fly home. So now fast forward about a week, and I'm coming out of the studio at 10 o'clock one morning, and I'm heading out, and I come into the lobby, and these two guys in suits stand up, and they say,
Slap handcuffs on you.
They say, Mr. Miller? I said, yeah. They said, we're so-and-so from the FAA. Could we talk to you for a minute? I was like, yeah. This is about the flight a week ago to Indianapolis. Okay.
So this was John McKay, and who else was there?
No, this is from the FAA.
Stolen. I just said it 5 minutes ago. Man. Stolen.
Well, not WFAA. We have new listeners all the time.
So we go into the conference room, and they're asking me these questions and whatnot. And they said, yes, the door seal broke, so you lost cabin pressure, and that's why the pilot went into a controlled nosedive for a couple minutes to get you down to 10,000 feet where you could all breathe. And I said, well, but we had the oxygen masks. So I said, if this had and he did say you were already starting your descent and you were at 30,000 feet or whatever. And I said, well, if this had happened at 40,000 feet, we still would have been okay because we had the oxygen masks, right? And they got real uncomfortable. And I remember they looked at each other and one of them said, Mr. Miller, do you know what a placebo is? And I said, yes. And he said, that's basically what an oxygen mask is at 40,000 feet. It does you no good.
Oh, man.
He said, you all would have been, before you could even get the mask, or even if you had the mask on, you all would have been knocked out, just like the Payne Stewart flight of a couple of weeks ago.
Oh.
Everybody would have been knocked out, and you all would have been dead.
And he said this to you, and you were at gunpoint.
And that's when I bit down on the cyanide capsule.
No.
Did the FAA come to talk to you guys?
They did not.
No.
Paul?
No. No, we're not.
See, we pranked you, Junior.
Yeah. Those are the two guys we hired to go up there and scare you.
A couple buddies from college.
Maybe because I was the representative of the company that organized the event.
Maybe.
Maybe that's why they talked.
I do recall that they met us at the bottom of the stairs of the plane when we walked
out. Yeah, they were
the
on the tarmac.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Yeah, they were asking me questions, and I said, look, I've been sitting in a puddle of urine for the last 15 minutes. I'm going to go over to the building, take a leak, and then we can talk about whatever you need to talk about.
So how long did they question
us? I remember kissing the ground when I got there. Kissing the
I remember you doing that, yeah.
Byron kissed the ground
like the Pope.
He got off the plane and kissed the ground.
I would have kicked him in the head while he's down there.
I have a picture of that, Paul, I can send to you.
That was funny.
I'd like to see it.
You took a creep shot of him while he's kissing the ground?
Yep.
He was documenting the trip.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Do you remember how many FAA people were there?
I recall two.
Yeah.
See, Gloria Campos and...
Stop it.
What?
And she retired.
Stolen anyway.
And do you remember the same thing? Like, were they... What kind of questions they asked?
Very quick questions. I think they mainly wanted to talk to the pilots.
Okay.
So, they were concerned with our personal safety.
Yes, okay.
Would you have been creeped out had they... handcuffed the pilots and led them away?
God.
What a creepy scene that would
that
be.
That would have been terrible.
Pilots are crying. I'm sorry.
Have you guys been on a small plane since?
I have.
No.
Went to Belize, and it was like two passenger, and I was standing behind the pilot. It seemed like there was just nothing but glass in front of us. It's kind of a... not the best feeling, being on a small plane.
Yeah, I have not. I had been on several before then. Uh-huh. But since then, no, but I've had some shaky commercial experiences, but that's another segment. Maybe.
Now they say that...
20 years from now, we'll talk about
people
it.
Who have gone through such a traumatic experience like that, they bond in a way that nobody can even understand. So how often have you guys talked in the past 20 years? You guys talk every couple days, every week?
We did have a one-year anniversary. Mm-hmm. Craig didn't show up. He was too big time, too busy.
Man,
but the four of us.
Wow, that petered out quickly, that close, unbreakable bond.
But then we all went our separate ways, and, you know, we've poked on it, heard Junior tell the story several times on the air, and, you know, that always, you know, brings the trauma back. Thank you.
I apologize for that, but we have seen each other at Ticket Stock and you email, you know, every once in a while on the anniversary. Paul, you've not been back on a small plane since.
No, absolutely not. But I was glad I got a hug from you at the Ohio State Oklahoma game a couple of years ago.
That's right. We bonded there.
But this is the first time you guys have all been together talking about it publicly, correct?
Yes.
That's right. Yep.
And plot twist, one of you will die on each anniversary hereafter. And the last one standing is going to have to try to solve who's eliminating everyone.
Duel and creep. Stop it. We're going to think about that for the rest of the day now.
That's right. Well, who's going to be the first to go?
Welcome to my world, by the way. He says stuff like that to me every day.
Speaking of talking about it, I remember asking Junior, hey, are you going to bring this up on the air tomorrow? And they were a sponsor, right?
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
yeah,
we
so
didn't
a gag
bring it
order.
Up, did we?
That's right. We didn't talk about it for a while on the air, in fact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A couple of years, maybe.
Yeah, because we still had like three more flights that season, so we didn't want to scare all the P1s. We had to keep the contest going, and the plane was really safe
after that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But now y'all have talked publicly.
It has really affected
me. Broken the rule.
Because I had adult onset fear of flying, and I've only in the last couple of years come to grips with big planes being okay, and I don't get as scared on those. But I've not been on a plane that size ever since, and I don't think I will be. It's been wonderful to share this, to relive this with you guys. We have bonded in a way that nobody can ever know.
Very emotional.
The six of us on that plane have a bond. It is. It's wonderful to relive this and to help each other with the trauma. Paul, thank you so much for joining us on the hotline, and thanks again for the theme song.
Oh, you bet. Thanks, guys. Great to hear from you, and Boomer Sooner.
Yeah, there you go. Tough one this last weekend.
Paul?
Andrew, thank you for the idea.
Sure.
Thank you for coming down here. Victor, good to see you.
Thank you. Go
Hawks.
You,
guys.
Thank you for sharing in the
Hawkeye
trauma. Yeah, he's wearing his Iowa Hawkeyes shirt. And Rance, wherever you are, and Rhonda, wherever you are, we all share this special moment, and we all made it through. We're alive today to talk about it.
Indeed.
All right, that's the story of Guy's Flight Out 20 years ago this week. We cheated death.